Ray Ferraro joins us. Final hit of the summer back home in Vancouver. Sunny out there, Ray?
Once this morning. Got a little cloudy here. I'm not real sure what's going on with that, but our weathermen here are extremely accurate, so tomorrow is supposed to be nice.
Nice. Now, before we get to the real stuff, we were talking about Jeannie Bouchard and, you know, the potential for huge endorsement deals for her and stuff, and it's all great. Over your career, Ray, did you ever have an endorsement deal?
Nothing of any note, really. Couple of small ones, but if you're as good as her, and you look like her, and you're as engaging personality-wise as her, she is a, and she's bilingual, of course. I mean, she's a grand slam.
Oh, for sure. Now, of all the teammates you played with over the years, what was, and you don't have to tell me the player's name, what was like one of the funniest endorsements a teammate of yours ever had in his career?
I wish I had a little leeway on this because I know there was a couple that were. One guy was doing a thing for a carpet company.
Yeah.
And it was like remarkably cheesy. And I assume he got paid okay for it, and I assume, you know, the deal worked out for the owner as well. But, man, did we have a lot of fun with it.
Oh, I can imagine
that. Talking about the carpet quality and the service, oh, man, it was awesome. Because it was also 25 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So it's like it was maybe a little more low rent than things are now.
I would think a guy who scored 108 goals would have ended up on a Wheaties box playing for the Brandon Wheat Kings, but that's just me.
I was in and out of there too fast. There was no... I was on a little small cereal box maybe, but that was in my own house.
Ray, still with the news of the day after the mention of Bouchard, Derek Laxdal gets the job with the Dallas Stars affiliate in Texas. You were a teammate of his in two stops, Portland and Brandon. I know you're just busy playing hockey back then. You've been out of the game for a while now. He's gone the career coaching route now. What about Laxdal getting the job in that organization?
Well, he is he's a really confident guy. He always was, even back to when I first met Derek. I was 18, so Derek would have been probably 16 at the time we were playing in Portland, and that was before we got traded to Brandon. And he was always a confident guy. He was always pretty sure of himself, but he was a prover. You know, nothing was really handed to him too easily, and you know, he as you see, he's a great big guy, but he was kind of awkward, and he had to grow into things, and people kept kind of shoving him aside, and he'd fight his way through. He ended up getting drafted and gets into the coaching ranks. And what I like about a guy like Derek is that he has coached just about everywhere. Wherever the road has taken him, that's where he's gone. He has stayed pretty true to wanting to be a head guy. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of guys will bounce back and forth between head guy, assistant guy, head guy. He's stayed pretty true to wanting to be a head coach. And you know, he's kind of getting into the wheelhouse age-wise where, you know, he can make a real push towards being a National Hockey League coach. And, you know, for Derek to go to that organization, they have got a boatload of young prospects there. And, of course, they come off the AHL championship. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, really good, well-attended, well-organized minor league team in Texas. They play in a 2 or 3 year old building that they average about 4,000 or 5,000 fans a game. So there's an importance to the community of it as well. And it's a great step for them. It really is.
Ray, you've had a few days now to look at the free agent signings, and you know what? Good for the players. This is a time where even though the team should be the ones holding the cards, the players always end up holding them the first day of free agency, and a lot of them make huge dollars. In your mind, which team improved the most and why?
Well, a couple of things first, though, Jason. Yeah, the money is absolutely staggering, but teams cannot blow out their brains anymore on free agency because it's nothing more than a mathematical equation. You get 50% of hockey-related revenue. That's it. If the teams can fit it, the teams can spend it. And, you know, you've got to allot it in a certain way, or, you know, how each team, of course, does it however they want to do it. But there was such a volume of players. The money, of course, is higher than it's ever been, but so is the revenues they've ever been. So the teams can absorb the costs because they can't go past what the mathematical equation tells them. The numbers are staggering to look at, for sure. Help themselves, St. Louis, for sure. You know, already one of the league's best teams, and they add Paul Stastny, who gives them skill and maybe the ability to, you know, for something more of a quick strike on their offense as opposed to a team that really wears you down. And you're not taking someone out of the lineup and putting in a soft player either. You know, Stastny plays the game hard. He really does. He's gone from one big contract to another big contract. Very familiar with St. Louis. I think the Blues did a terrific job, not only signing Stastny, who was the number one forward out there, but getting him for 4 years.
Yeah.
And I really think that's maybe, outside of what Washington did, that was the, you know, the standout point for me, I guess, was that the players, for the most part, took relatively lower term because that's what was offered to them. And if there's a way to mitigate costs for the teams, it's to keep the number of years you sign guys at as close to a comfortable number as possible.
Yeah, and you brought up Washington. Like, Brooks Orpik, historically defensive defenseman. We've seen so many guys get bought out. Like, they're great guys, and I understand you need them to win, but Brooks Orpik, at his age, at 5 years, Ray, like that's easily the worst contract handed out in free agency, no?
Oh, I would say it was close to it, if it's not. I'm, you know, God bless the man, but, you know, Derek Englund going to $3 million is, wow, that's quite a leap. He must have got good over the offseason. You know, I mean, it's just a boatload of money for a player that is a number five or six defenseman, in my opinion. For Brooks Orpik, I just don't know how you get bang for the buck there. And in 3 years, $5 million is going to seem like a lot of money. As I said on our show on TV, these deals are about today, and the teams generally seem to have a opinion of, yeah, we'll figure out the back end of the deal later.
Yeah.
You know, like they can't project that far ahead, because you can't tell me at age 37 that Brooks Orpik is going to be a punishing hitter. Because there's very few guys that are punishing hitters in their mid-30s. And into your late-30s, it's just really difficult to even imagine that.
Yeah. Ray, I kind of like the looks of what Dallas did, too, with Spezza and Hemsky. That really changes the dynamic of their top nine. And you're talking about players, when we talk about age, who, yes, are 30 years old or better, but still seem to have a lot of miles left. How about your take on them?
What I liked best about what Dallas was able to do is, you know, lots of teams bring in lots of players. Okay, I mean, look, the Oilers brought in a number of players, and you're going to put them into the soup pot and hope it all works, right? Because how do you know? You, these guys they've never played together. They've never been on the ice together in most cases. And Hemsky and Spezza, you know, they become the second line, if you will, in if you like numbering your lines, in Dallas, and they know each other. They've just finished playing together. There's familiarity. I mean, the only difference is, instead of red and white, they'll wear green and white on their sweaters. I really like what they did. And then you put them in a pairing with Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, and, man, that top six looks pretty dynamic all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. I like what they did. And, like, the Central Division, my goodness, Colorado won that division last year. And I know that if you look at a lot of the number of shots on goal and everything, then maybe it's a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Their goaltender stood on his head. Chicago adds Richards, a pretty solid guy, for 1 year. You mentioned St. Louis, Dallas. Man, like, Colorado, they're going to struggle just to finish fourth now, maybe, in that division. If you're a Jets fan, you're probably crying after watching free agency, because your team, you know, your team really didn't make any moves other than Perreault.
If you're in the Western Conference, you're probably crying.
Yeah.
I mean, Anaheim got better.
Yep.
Dallas got better. I you know, St. Louis, you just talk about Los Angeles didn't need to get better. San Jose, I'm not real sure what's going on there. To be honest with you, they're the team that I have as big a question mark about any, and for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, Doug Wilson says they want to make, you know, some major changes, and it's hard to see where the major changes are going to be, but they're taking Brent Burns off the right side of Joe Thornton and moving him back to the blue line. Nobody's really sure how that's going to play out. They trade Brad Stewart, and they lose Dan Boyle, and I can't tell you what their defense is going to look like, and they've got the same goaltending. And so, San Jose is a team that I would be – I have some question about of the better teams in the Western Conference. I mean, Chicago got better with Brad Richards. They didn't need to get a whole lot better. They were, you know, an overtime goal away from being in the Stanley Cup final. The Western Conference, to make the playoffs right now, you're in a cycle of where it might feel like for a couple of years here that teams are banging their head against a wall that just won't move.
Ray, with the Oilers, we touched on the bodies Mac T brought in. I want to go a bit beyond that, though. They get Leon Draisaitl with the third overall pick. Now, we know they've still got a couple of holes at center. With a kid like Draisaitl, though, do you have an overriding philosophy about a kid like that? I mean, a lot of people say patience is always best, and I don't disagree with that. But if a strong kid like that shows that he's ready to play, do you give him a chance to make the roster as an 18-year-old and try and find that other center to eat up some of the minutes between Nugent Hopkins on top and Boyd Gordon down below?
I try both. I give him training camp, and I give him the exhibition season, and I likely start the season with him and see where it takes me. My overriding thought is 18-year-olds should not play in the National Hockey League. If I'm a manager, the kid has to knock my socks off. And the reason I say that is not about maturity or not about injury, although injury I would be a little bit concerned with, you know, more with Nugent Hopkins, less with Draisaitl, just out of their physical stature. But I'm talking strictly from a financial point of view, that a kid gets in at 18, he's 18, 19, now you're negotiating a deal for him when he's 20 years old. And the deal he's going to want is going to look unpalatable in many cases. So if Draisaitl can play, if he can play as your third center, because, guys, that's as high as he's going to play this year. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what you guys think, but rare is an 18-year-old centerman. Other positions maybe, center, to come into the Western Conference and handle these guys. Last year he was playing against 16-year-olds. This year he's going to be playing against Anže Kopitar. It's a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I would say you're going to try and protect him a little bit, but he might show you at camp that he can handle it. He might not. I guess people, you know, want to make their assumptions and predictions. It's July 3rd. You know, he's got a long way to go before he gets to the first day of training camp, and that camp and that exhibition season would tell me a lot more. I would still look for a centerman. If I could find a cost-effective guy right now, I would still look for it. You know, look what Toronto did today. They signed three players to one-year deals.
Yeah.
I'm not going to blow my brains out on a centerman, but I would explore a trade. I would explore perhaps if there's a free agent still there, you might take a look at. I mean, I wouldn't go 4 or 5 years on David Legwand. He's still out there, and I just wouldn't do that.
No. Nope.
I mean, he'll probably get it somewhere, but if you could get him at 2 years, wouldn't you be a lot more interested?
Yes, I agree with you. That's what I said earlier. You'd be willing to pay him a little bit more money on 2 years rather than going the 4 years just because of the age and everything else. And that can, you know, you don't want the anchor contracts. You can live with it if you're not on a cap crunch, which the Oilers aren't, on short-term deals if you have to pay more, which is basically what they did with Nikita.
Well, and Vancouver just did it with Radim Vrbata.
Yep.
You know, if that's a 4-year, $20 million contract on Vrbata, I don't like it. 2 years and $10 million, I can live with that. And what it does, and in a sense, I mean, Vancouver's different than Edmonton, but really not that much different in the position that they're in, which is outside of the playoffs and trying to get back in it. Signing a veteran for a couple-year deal, what it does is it pushes your young guys down into the American League and back to junior where they probably belong and where they can develop and where they can make mistakes, and it doesn't become this draining day after day battle to just hang on. Where I'm telling you guys, what the player starts to think is, I'm brutal. I suck. I can't play with these guys. You start to feel it because night after night you lose, night after night you make mistakes, and lots of times it's just because mentally you're not strong enough and physically you're not strong enough. But in 2 years you're going to be. And lots of teams overrush their players. They don't let them mature, and they rush them into the NHL. They get disappointed with them. They move them on, and oh, here's a young player on his second team who's 24 years old. And you go, wow, that guy's a really good player. Where's he been? Well, he's been bounced around a few times, up and down. Now, why would you do that if you don't have to? You can get a veteran for 2 years. I'm all for plugging a hole and bridging your way to your young guys, not just handing them the keys to the car.
Ray, always fun to talk to you throughout the season. Enjoy the summer months. We'll talk to you in September.
Yeah, you guys have a great summer season in Edmonton, and camp will roll around soon enough. And Jason, thanks. It's been a great year.